Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello and welcome. I am Morgana. Here is my husband, Devin. And before we launch into today's show, I want to speak about something very serious. It has come to my awareness that side parts are out. Now, I was not consulted on this, and I do not approve this, and I did not survive 80s fashion to have kids telling me that side parts are out. And if you come at me with your side part hate, I will make you sorry.
I don't even know what you're talking about. this is something to do with
your
hair.
I am wearing my side part with pride. So I'm glad we got that out of the way. I'm too old for that nonsense.
I am very proud of you, honey. fight the power.
Right.
Good on you. Okay, so. Right, so okay, so we have a thing. We have this show.
We have this show. And you are in the middle of feasting on God's love this week, I think.
I am. This is okay. So, all right. So for those who don't know, I am a Baha'i. I'm a member of the Baha'i faith. It basically means we believe in progressive revelation. And we don't have a lot of holidays. We have a few. But one of the sort of like at the beginning of what would be our new year, the month of Allah, we fast during the day. No water, no food, no nothing. So that means I wake up in the darkness, I scarf food down, and then when this show is over, where I'll be like on my last anything, I will eat like crazy. And so this is, I think, day three. This is day three. And really, it's just, I know that my wife
out of how many?
Of 19 days.
The world is filled with perfectly wonderful religions that have you feast on holidays, and you picked the one.
That
19 days.
Is a long time. Yes. So I will be feasting on God, on the all heavenly thing. And so I think it's a fantastic religion. I'm grateful for it. And I believe in it. And this is one of those moments where you get to be really conscious about your food intake and really sort of just conscious of what you're doing during the course of a day. And so, yeah, I am hungry.
And you give your wife an opportunity to tease you.
Yes, which she does with some
regularity. I also offer myself as a distraction from the hunger, too, generously.
I'm the luckiest guy. If I can't have food... My wife is right here.
Yeah.
I am, how lucky can one lucky guy be? So it's an awful lot of luck and good fortune. So anyway, we don't have to talk about my feasting. Do we start talking about our guest?
Yeah, so as we've been talking about in past weeks, we have been on Clubhouse, the new audio-only app, a lot. We have a podcasting for authors room every Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, talking about podcasting for authors, anything about writing and marketing and publishing your book and using podcasting to build your platform, because Devin is a writer. We're both writers. I think he enjoys the writing process more than I do. I actually enjoy the book launching.
Right.
Yeah, totally perverse. And then we also have been doing a lot of relationship rooms on midlife love and you know, specific questions. Like, we had a really fun room a couple of weeks ago about what makes a man want to get married, which honestly I think is a topic we should address here, not tonight, but on this show in a future episode. And I have known Dr. Gary Salyer for about a decade, and really, really smart guy, and also in our vintage, and in relationship, and I thought, ooh, he would be fun to have as a guest expert in that clubhouse room. Just try him out, see what he would be like. And we had a host of experts, and Gary really stood out for me in the kindness and generosity and wisdom of his responses to hundreds of people coming into the room with their questions about love and marriage and men, mysterious men. And I just had to have him on the show, especially because his specialty, his what he's known for, his book, I know he's got way more than that, but he wrote a book called Safe to Love Again. And I love that title. And I understand that whole thing about love having to be safe. That was the thing I needed to shift in myself. And then 2 weeks after I confronted my own inner demons about love, I met Devin. So change, inner change can produce outer results a lot faster than you might expect. And I'm always saying that change happens at the speed of safety. And in this case, we're looking at love happens at the speed of safety, especially for women. For men too, but I think, well, I hear what women say more. Devin hears the guy side a lot. But just for both, we want to introduce you to Dr. Gary Salyer. And especially because even last week when Devin and I were having our Q&A episode, taking in audience questions, one of the questions that really jumped at me was the woman who wrote that the prospect of dating fills her with dread. She's had her heart broken so many times, the whole idea that just fills her with dread. And I've been there. Like, I quit dating for years before I started like dipping my toe in the water again and then met Devin. But it hurt so much that I took a long time out. And I don't know that we need to take that long, especially when we have an expert here to help.
We could ask him.
Yeah, to help you make the transition faster. So let's bring in Dr. Gary. Hello.
Hello, Morgana and Devin. And
good to see you.
It's great seeing you guys too. And I'm just wanting to tell you, Morgana, that I'm wearing my side part, other side part, middle part, all part.
Solidarity, man.
Right.
We are in this together.
Yay. I feel seen.
Yes.
So, Gary, why did you write your book, Safe to Love Again?
You know, I wrote it because I really, really thought that I had a pilgrimage where it took me forever to figure out, you know, why I was continually creating the same Groundhog Day in love, picking or choosing or creating the same sort of dysfunctional relationships. And it wasn't like I didn't have the degrees. It wasn't like I hadn't done, you know, what was it, like 13 years of therapy, you know, and I know one should work this hard, you know. So when I put it all together, I wanted people to know that there's a way back. There's a way back to that safe place in your heart. One of the things, if I can share it, was I was at a party in Marin, and there was it was a super growth community, and about 20 people had read the book Attached, the first book that came out in 2008 about attachment theory. And from that, about 15 of them told me that variant of the same story, where the one guy said, look, I looked at all this thing and I saw, you know, there's three attachment styles. There's secure, the people that really create great relationships like you guys are doing now. There's the anxious who are afraid always, you know, love goes away. And there's the avoidance who are afraid they're, you know, when does love stay around, basically, you know, he said, I realized I was avoidant. And now I feel like I've got this invisible sign over my head that says screwed. It's because the book didn't give him a roadmap for how he can recover a secure love map. And I just think, and that's when I decided to write the book, was because nobody should have to walk around thinking after whatever divorce or painful pattern they've had, that I've got this invisible sign that says screwed. That's when you start dreading love.
I had trouble with that book because what it left out for me is that I experience myself as all three depending on context. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't get married until I was 47, so there must be some avoidance there. Mm-hmm. But I also have a very anxious attachment style. And then I also have a secure attachment style when I'm feeling good about myself and when also when I'm in a healthy relationship. But I could see that depending on the person, I would move from style to style. So that notion that we're just condemned to one box seemed a little extreme.
Most people have a dominant style. You know, style that tracks through most relationships. But you're on to something. I mean, they've actually done, when they look at little kids, if you get into the more sophisticated attachment studies, little kids can have a secure relationship with a mom or dad and an anxious or avoidant one with the other one. Our brains are very, you know, high-powered and discerning. We know who we're in a relationship. You can take a secure person, put them with an anxious, and they'll get it, and they'll get a little avoidant, right?
And if you put a secure person with an avoidant, they'll get anxious, right?
Exactly. We, you know, attachment, it was meant to be dynamic. It was adaptable. And so it's not written in stone, and it is meant to be changing. You know, if we get into whatever the context is, this is why the basis of attachment is the attuned response that's timely and is attuned. You don't, if you suddenly stop getting attuned responses, your brain has to make an adjustment. Rightly so.
So the full title of your book is Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So let's start with the how to release.
How to release. You know, okay. Most of us, we have these patterns, right? And we think, oh, it's communication or, you know, I don't know enough about dating or whatever it is, right? Or maybe it's even gender competency. But what I say in the book is that early on, usually in childhood, sometimes it can be later relationships, if something happens, but usually it's early on, especially in the first 3 years, we get what I call rights or templates or permission slips for certain experiences. And we're getting them from early parenting. We get things like, do we feel welcome with joy so we feel we have a right to exist in this world? Do we feel worthy because it's okay to reach out for our needs? Do we feel cherished and protected, which means we get to be a me that explores and then comes back to the home port of someone's heart? We get to have a me and we, not one or the other. And then do we feel empowered with choice so we can create our own experience? Someone else isn't the standard of it. When we have a voice, they get to share influence. Now, if we get all those beautiful, juicy permission slips, which I call rights, and we get those feelings running the show that tell us who...
We didn't get those.
That's right. Yeah. Then we're on a learning curve, like I was, right? And it's... So to release the past pain is... So if we got unwelcomed, or we got unworthy, or we got not so cherished, you know, or we got disempowered, the releasing the pain is to release that pain by swapping out and getting our brain safe with feeling worthy again or empowered again or cherished again or welcomed again. That's the releasing of the past pain, to know that you were born to feel worthy and empowered and welcomed and cherished in a relationship. If you feel those four feelings, you feel loved. And it's swapping that out and making the brain safe to feel empowered again or to feel worthy again. That's what swapping out real pain means.
So my concern here, and I know that Devin has a question because I could hear the energy of it, but I spoke first. So my concern is that the person listening will go, oh yeah, I need to do that. And then that becomes another thing to punish themselves with, that I don't... I don't worthy myself well enough. I don't love myself well enough. So knowing what needs to be done is different than having like a tool.
Yes.
To like make that change. Can you offer like maybe a beginner's exercise to start the process?
The process of feeling worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I totally get that concern. Right after the book was launched, I mean, published, I was at an event back when we could do that sort of thing. And somebody called one of her friends over and says, oh, this is Dr. Gary. He just wrote a book on love. And this woman, her face went white as a sheet. She stepped back and says, oh, not another book that tells me how wrong I am. And that's, you know, there's whatever feeling you have, there's nothing wrong with that feeling. Your brain, you got it naturally. Your brain took the best deal available at some earlier time. And so we're not making anybody wrong. We're just, because whatever decision your brain took, this feel unworthy or disempowered, it was part of a whole safety process that at one time was the best deal. No brain gets up in the morning and says, how can I screw with my master today? It doesn't say that. So if you're, so just thinking, you know, sometimes people will say, well, gosh, you know, worthy is for those other really cool people, you know, but not me, but not me. And I just, you know, so probably just remember, if you go back and just remember, you know, the little one who felt not so worthy, or it might not, if it's another one, a feeling if it may not be so welcomed in the world or not very cherished or disempowered, whatever that core feeling is. And just, now I want you to just imagine all of the little 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds who are 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, when you first started feeling that feeling. And I want you to just imagine for just a second, all the little children in the world. How many of those children don't deserve to feel welcomed or empowered to make a choice? We all instinctively know we do. So just bring that back. Just bring that feeling back that every child deserves it. You were born worthy and welcomed. Someone had to teach you not to be. You know, is there going to be welcomed or worthy is like, it's okay to reach out and have my needs. Is there going to be any headlines in the New York Times today that says parent gives child its needs? No, that's not news. So just know that, just bring that feeling back that every child deserves it. We intuitively know that. Yeah. And so now you know that someone had to teach it to you, and there's more things we could do, but just bring that feeling of worthy back and let that little one know we're so sorry that they weren't given that beautiful feeling they deserved, and let them know they deserve it. Just tell that inner child inside of you, if you're listening, you were born worthy and we're going to help you get there. Feel that again.
So how does that translate to now I'm in my 40s or my 50s and I'm no longer this adorable, innocent 3-year-old. Now I know all the horrible mistakes I've made, the mean things I've done, the dumb things I've done, the things I'm ashamed of. How do I bring that feeling of lovable and worthiness to where I am today?
Well, you know, when I work with people, there's a lot of deeper work that helps people. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause there was originally some time when it didn't feel very safe to feel welcomed, right? Or empowered. I know in my own childhood, you know, growing up with a borderline mother, you know, at some point in time, if you were empowered to speak your truth with a borderline, you're going to hit a wall sometime. So it's about working with someone who's got some of these skills that you can find the exact flavor of safety your brain needs to feel welcomed or worthy in. That, you know, and that's hard doing that on a call to be like this.
Yeah. By the way, I have a borderline personality mother also, but for those who don't know what borderline personality is, can you explain that briefly?
Borderline personalities, they were usually abused at an early time, and they have explosive temperament changes. You will find yourself walking on eggshells. They're extremely volatile. They do splitting. The world is all good or all bad. You never know where it's coming from. They're often violent. They are off, and you are constantly, they are always pushing away love while there's a deep anxiety. It's like they've got a, outside the house of relationships, they have a bouncer, like you, when you go to a disco or any, you know, a dance hall. And that, in the moment you get close, that bouncer pushes you away, and usually pretty emotional and often physically violent ways.
Well, I found it to be extremes of, like, mom was the warmest, best mm-hmm. mother in the world.
Yes.
And then flip. Suddenly I was the monster, not worthy of life. And it would come, the switch would come quickly.
Yes, it's a quick switch. And they come in different flavors. I mean, one book said they, you can have the hermit, or you can have a queen, you can have a witch. You know, there's variations of how violent they can be. Sometimes they're operating about from a place, the world is a scary place, and they're very introverted, but they're constantly being anxious, and they can, yes, they can be very nice and just in a literally in a split second turn on you, and you don't know which way is up anymore. The dominant feeling I know I had as a kid was, when is it coming? It could come any second.
Yeah.
That's the way a lot of people feel.
I mean, I think this is fascinating stuff. You know, one of the things that you were talking about, you know, when you were talking about the different sort of attachment styles and how we cope, mm-hmm. and certainly Safe to Love Again implies to me, if a non-clinician for sure, I understand it is just sort of like, this is what the baggage is, right?
Yes.
Like you want to be in a relationship because I think we want to be in love and we want to feel love and we want to feel appreciated. We want to feel connected. And then so we show up in a relationship, but we have this extensive history, you know, probably with mom or dad or aunt or uncle or, you know, somebody that, you know, helped raise us and guide us and maybe gave us terrible advice. And then, of course, there might have been some initial first relationship, et cetera, et cetera. You know, while you were talking about this, you know, the thing that kind of popped into my head is that a lot of it had to do with just my own personal perception of things. And whether or not things were done to me on purpose. Now, I didn't even know if there's a question in this. More than it is perhaps what you're bringing up is sort of like bringing up sort of an observation in me, which is, you know, I think for a long time, and this may be going into the sexy, crazy sexy midlife love thing, is that I think for me is that I had to kind of start realizing that a lot of this stuff wasn't necessarily done on purpose. Like I have my own mother. Yeah. She was wonderful. And she probably fits a number of things in the DSM-4 or 5 or whatever. Like I think she fits into a whole slew of things by her own admission. I recognize that the results of how that affected me was just part of the experience of me being raised by her.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think it took a certain amount of detachment, I would say. You know, I think during my 20s, as an example, I was still too close. You know, I was out of the house and living my own life, et cetera, et cetera. And it was still very close to how that thing negatively impacted me, as along with, you know, certainly initial women that I first dated who hurt me for a variety of reasons. And I was probably a terrible relationship partner. Matter of fact, certainly a terrible relationship partner. And so I think it's just part of that, you know, part of it is the maturing part of it. Does your book deal with part of that? Is like, how do we kind of evolve just spiritually or mentally to get to a place where we can?
It does. I mean, I actually, it's the only attachment book I know that has a chapter on the soundtrack, and I call it the soundtrack and the soul lesson. What's the emotional soundtrack that's been playing all of our life? And then, you know, how could we learn our lessons from that, right? And you talked about baggage. And, you know, I mean, at one point in time, I would say I had baggage. I think I had a whole Samsonite factory.
Right.
You know, like one that we talked on the call that is relevant is, you know, when I was a kid, you did not want to feel into, you know, what mom was feeling because it was so volatile. So I learned to be in my head. What felt better, being confused in all that chaos and that anger, or being up here in my head? You could predict, a PhD from that. So everything was about analyzing, thinking, not feeling. Don't feel. Whatever you do, don't feel. Now, man, yes, woo, no, bye, back, you know. And imagine when I unconsciously took that into my first marriage, right? So there was this, in my first marriage, I was married a couple of years, and I was maybe 26, 27, and she began to complain that I wasn't feeling what she needed. I wasn't seeing her. I wasn't really getting her, right? And I didn't read her very well. So what did I do? I went out and read 5 books. What's a good intellectual going to do? Good intellectual who's in his head, he goes out and reads 5 books on women. So then now I'm all loaded up. Now I know what she wants. Right? And so the first time I'm doing what these books say, and she goes, that's not what I wanted, Gary. And I go, but you know, it's interesting. This one book said that women like this. And then a few weeks later, she said something else and I missed some point. Yeah, that's really interesting. But this other book said women like this. Now, and then I said,
and that story is even better if all the books were written by men, by the way. But go on.
Exactly. And then I said, oh, a little bit later, but that's interesting. I missed that because the book said women like this. That happened about 10 times. And one day she turned, glared and looked and she goes, first off, my name isn't women. And secondly, read me, not the darn books. And I go, oh. But how do you read if you can't be in your feelings? Mm. No one, you know. So my solution to the problem was more the problem. That's what it feels like. And some part of me was just trying to still survive when I was 4, 5, and 6. And that's what baggage is. Baggage, we give it that terrible name, but it's simply an old way of surviving that was the best deal available. And that's all it was. There was just a little scared 7-year-old says, oh my God, I don't want to have feelings. And it was helping that 7-year-old feel more and more safe with his feelings. And that's, and to be honest with you, when I was able to get back in my feelings, I used to think women were such a mystery. And it was like, wow, you can actually see them. You can feel them. This is crazy, you know? And it's more and more, it was like getting my sight on for a blind man, you know? So, if we're going to look at the crazy wild side of love in our 40s and 50s and 60s, you know, it may be exploring all those old safety things that we don't even, you know, that feel like old shoe leather, and realizing that there may be a soul lesson. There's a spiritual side to this. We signed up for a lesson. And, I just find it interesting that for a little kid who could never be in his feelings, he writes a book, 40 years later, that's, 50 years later, that's all about 4 key feelings. That's my soul lesson. It's okay, feelings. It's how do we recover the right ones? They're our birthright. And, what will help create the love that we're afraid of is to restore those feelings so we only receive them and we only give them. And when we start giving these 4 key feelings of welcomed and worthy and cherished and part, we will pick better.
Can you repeat those again slower?
There are 4 key feelings your brain uses as a GPS for love. Learned early, right? And the keys that make us feel truly loved are, do you feel welcomed with joy? You know, that's like when you wake up in the morning, good morning, gorgeous, good morning, handsome. When you come in at the door and go, God, you're a sight for sore eyes, right? Welcomed is, that's welcomed. Then there's worthy and nourished. Worthy is, you have a right to reach out and say, honey, I really need a massage tonight. My neck is killing me. And you know, they'll rub your, or this is what I need. It's okay to reach out and you feel worthy to have your needs met. Cherished and protected comes from the original template as a little toddler who is learning to walk and get out there and explore their toys. They want to be me, but they want you in the room. If you know, you know, if you leave the room, you know what happens. They start crying. They want to know they're still in the we, that someone's looking over them, seeing them, protecting them. They get to be me in a we, not all me, not all we. So they feel cherished. They feel protected. That's when someone sees an essence in you that they can't find elsewhere. And that even though they might be able to find this or that, or, you know, but there is something in that person that they want to cherish and protect because there's an essence that they just fell in love with. And then there's empowered. Empowered with choices. Do I get to create my own experience? Do we get to co-create? Do we get to share influence? Do I get to have a voice? Is someone looking at my dreams, tracking them and empowering them? So if you're feeling welcomed and worthy and cherished and empowered, you feel pretty loved. And if you're feeling dread in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, you are probably using old feelings like unwelcome or unworthy or uncherished or disempowered to navigate love. And we need to swap that out. There's some beautiful soul lessons where you are able to, and it's your right to reclaim all four of those feelings. Every one of those feelings, you and I and everyone listening, we were born worthy of all those feelings.
And I think that's incredible stuff. I kind of want to go back to something that you said about, you know, that it's all lessons. Mm-hmm. When I hear that, I certainly think about just sort of like, you know, well, as you were describing, you know, it's like here you are, this analytical guy, and all of a sudden years later, here you are writing this book on emotions. Yes. And I have a whole slew of those kinds of things like, oh, I can't write a book. I shouldn't. You know, I was told by my third grade teacher, well, you should take a lot of woodshop classes because you'll never be a writer. And of course, now it's. But those are the kinds of lessons that we have to overcome. I mean, do you think that's just part of the human experience in terms of like, I mean, do we all have to go through this? Or, I mean, I realize that like I have friends who, you know, I've grown up with, I've known, you know, 40, 50 years. And a couple of them like met the high school sweetheart, stayed with the high school sweetheart, married to the high school sweetheart for many, many years. Like, and they just seem to do it well. I can't speak to other components of their life, but their relationship seems to work. Do you think that there's just a certain class of person that we just like, we don't get the relationship thing. So we need some lessons that we have to really kind of consciously pull through, fight for, learn from.
I think we sign. My own experience and my own viewpoint is that we sign up for certain experiences in life, certain lessons. I know that some part of my soul signed up to have that experience as a childhood so I could ask the right questions so I could do what I'm doing now. I think we all sign up for lessons. And the lessons, you know, it's always the contrast. It's if you signed up and you got a lot of unwelcomed and unworthy, then you were probably learning a lesson on worthiness, right? It's the contrast. And I do believe that now on the other, that we all sign up for lessons, but the issue is, do we learn them? Because I also believe that there's some other, you know, a lot of people, if they're not aware or they're not paying attention, they wind up being on a sabbatical incarnation. You know, they're not really learning. And the key here is to notice with kindness towards oneself, what is that lesson that I signed up for that can give more power and purpose to me now? And how do I learn that lesson? When I work with higher self lessons, I think that's part of love. It's not just the feelings. It's not just skills. And yes, couples do need certain skills. And so do singles when they're dating. But there's these lessons that pull it all together. And I began to notice working with clients over the years that you could help them with their feelings and the skills. But until it became, you know, unified in their soul as this, yes, that's my lesson, right? I tell the story that there's always this contrast. And whatever the contrast is our specific lesson. When I work with this, I tell the story about this little angel this little angel's only a couple million years old, right? And she loves the light. Oh my God, she loves the light, right? Every sunset, every star, every every light, she's there. And she, one day she hears a rumor that you can learn an awful lot in a human incarnation. So she goes up to the head office of the head angel and says, "Hey, I hear you can learn a lot through a human incarnation." And the head angel says to her, "Yes, sweetie, that's actually the case." She goes, "Well, I want to learn from an incarnation. Can we set one up where I learn everything about the light?" And the head angel, she looks at her and she goes, "Yes, we can do that." So the next day she heads into an incarnation, and there she is for 80 years, and there's nothing but gloom and doom and darkness and depression. And then, you know, after about 80 years, the angel pops out and she is pissed. Oh my God, she is pissed. she storms the Bastille, runs into the head angel's office, says, "What were you thinking? I asked for light. You know, you gave me gloom and doom and darkness." And the head angel looks at her and said, "You asked to learn about the light. Don't you know that even in the dictionary, you can't have a definition without the antonym?" She goes, "We can know nothing without contrast. It's the contrast that allows us to understand anything. Because if you had asked to understand about wealth, you would have had to understand poverty. If you had asked about health, I would have had to have given you disease." She goes, "Do you remember when you were 20 and you were in college and you got trapped in a snowstorm and all you could see was the light and then you got snow blindness? I gave you that so you could realize that if all you saw and all you noticed was the light, you could see nothing. So what did the darkness teach you about the light?" And I set that up so when we look at all the times unworthiness or disempowered shows up in someone's life, so what sort of lesson did you have to sign up for to have that specific feeling of disempowered or that specific feeling of not belonging or unworthy? And it's I can still remember when one client, she was in a relationship where this guy had cheated like 7 or 8 times, and her feeling was unworthy, very unworthy. And he always, and every time he said the magic words, "I was a jerk," those were the magic words, "I was a jerk," she would forgive him and take him back. And then the pattern repeat. And when she looks at all that feeling of worthiness, she goes, "Oh my God, I signed up to realize how worthy I am." Mm-hmm. Another guy had this feeling of disempowered. "If I'm ever in a relationship, I'm going to be disempowered." And his lesson was, "Could it be that I could actually be empowered in a relationship?" And of course, that was the beginning of his marriage turning totally around when he realized he could be empowered by being in a relationship. Those are the sort of beautiful things that when people are looking at that negative soundtrack, there's always a lesson that's positive. And that's the gateway to getting past the dread. That's the gateway to really creating, you know, this sexy, wild, crazy love that you guys are talking about. This, and you know, I know you guys are friends. You guys do welcome, worthy, cherished, and empowered all day long. It just flows around you. You know, it's a festival. And it's the real key is to reclaim our right to feel all that and to give all that.
You know, first of all, I absolutely love, 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 love that story. And, you know, yeah, we walk around empowered and we're good, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't, you know, I mean, I want anybody to listen, you know, who might be listening. That's not necessarily a natural state. You know, all of a sudden I was 12 years old and all of a sudden, boom, it was all there. Yes. It was the opposite. And I think it was like, you know, where I've had friends who just like, oh, they got together and everything's great. And they'll be together forever. Many blessings, God willing, all of those kinds of things. And I think me personally, like I had to walk through the lessons. And one of the things that I've, at least this is maybe me being too woo-woo or Kabbalistic or something like that, but the way I've always kind of started to see it, like certainly mm-hmm. as I've matured, is that all those people who came, you know, the terrible relationships, the mistake relationship, all of those things, when I really start looking at my own history, instead of going, oh, they were terrible people, look what they did to me, XYZ and all that other stuff, yeah, shaking my fist at the heavens, was really much more about, oh, these were people who took me from point A to point B in my own sort of development, my own, like, here's a specific lesson I needed to learn. And sometimes I dated the same kind of woman over and over again until that lesson really became abundantly clear.
Yeah.
I like to look at lessons as almost like a UPS driver who just is going to keep on knocking on your door in different guises until
they never knock on the door.
Right. Well, in my imaginary, UPS delivery, like the lesson just will keep knocking on your door through different experiences and different people until finally you accept the gift, and then the challenge no longer has, the dynamic no longer has a reason to exist.
Exactly. You know, my reframing that I've used in my work, and even in my, when I was doing live events, is they're not exes, they're lesson partners. Mm-hmm. And the real key is, how do we turn our lesson partners into life partners? You know, but if we call them lesson partners, we honor them. And just because it didn't work out or two people had not learned their lessons, does, you know, so many times we think we have to hate them or, you know, or some lesser form of that. And we don't. We can be thankful for, you know, that there was a lesson that person gave me. You know, and I am grateful for, I wouldn't want to go repeat exactly my childhood, right? But I am grateful for the experience, because every last bit of that has empowered me to become who I am now. And I'm actually a better soul than I would have been, you know? And I mean, I agree with you, both of you, that this is about learning lessons. There is a spiritual quality to that, to this.
Well, and I love the phrase lesson partners, because that make, like, I just think back on any guy I ever dated and I learned something about myself. Mm-hmm. In each one that was useful, that I needed to know. And what I really am appreciating about everything you've been saying tonight, Gary, is you bring such compassion and love to the patterns that we adopted for survival that we've outgrown and we may judge now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just started the whole conversation with love and honor and respect. It's sort of like the Marie Kondo approach to, I release you with love. You no longer spark joy pattern.
Judgment doesn't do anything. It doesn't get us anywhere. I can honestly say that after, you know, my first divorce, because I'm twice divorced, I walked into therapy, but I was so afraid that I would meet my mother in me that I told my therapist, she wanted to take me a few places, and I said to her, you will never get me to look at that Medusa within me. And I refused to let her take me because I was not going to look at the Medusa. Now, that's what I called it, the Medusa, right? Now, after my second divorce, I'm thinking maybe it's time I get the courage to look at this Medusa. And when I worked with somebody, I told him, this time I want to look at the Medusa. You know what I found? A scared 7-year-old boy. No Medusa, no snaky hair, just a scared little 7-year-old boy hiding out in his bedroom or a closet trying, that we would, any of us would take in our arms. And that was the moment that things started shifting. You know, that you're, you know, when you are judging yourself, some part, how can you tell you, you're supposed to feel worthy? You know, that doesn't work.
You don't love yourself well enough. Shame on you. Like, that's so much of our personal development industry boils down to that, which is not helpful.
I never tell. I actually never tell someone to love themselves. If we can reclaim that feeling that I am welcomeable and cherishable and empowered, if you can reclaim that, you won't have to ask yourself. Those feelings naturally create loving states towards self and others. You know, that's And then you don't have to do the guilt. Well, you're supposed to love yourself. Now, what is love? But it's these four feelings. You reclaim the feelings and these rights I talk about. It just happens. You get it for the same price. You know, I don't. So I never use the term. I just say, well, we can get you feeling those four feelings. You're going to feel pretty loving towards yourself.
So is it safe to guess that if you can work on feeling those things on your own, you have a better shot at feeling those things and choosing somebody who brings those qualities to a relationship?
Yes. And the phrase working on your own, it's hard doing it, you know, a lot, you know, these feelings, you know, sometimes I talk about in the book that we have a right to separate and belong, to get the proper support that we need, right? It's pretty hard to add these feelings if you don't already have them. You need someone, you know, so you work on it if, in terms of working on it before you meet the next, but just by yourself in your library or in your home, you do need someone that can help you, because it's hard to bring worthy when you're not feeling it. You need someone that can help you put that on your map. Right?
I would argue that you also need somebody who is not emotionally invested in the outcome. In other words, if I'm by myself, I have a narrative that can roll around in my head. And I may just keep looking to prove the narrative over and over again, but it's very different when I have to articulate my feelings to another human being, when I have to actually express it in real words in front of another person. And I think that's kind of like a very important piece. And then somebody, again, who's not emotionally invested, like I'm emotionally invested in my nonsense, right?
We all are.
It's my nonsense, and I'm going to defend it, right? I'm shaking my fist at the heavens some more.
And it's high-quality nonsense.
High quality.
The best. Premium.
Unique. Unheard of nonsense.
Yes.
And by the way, I say that with great love, because I think we all have some measure of nonsense floating around. But I think it's really important that, you know, I think it's very easy for other people to see beyond the solution of my nonsense, but I'm wrapped up in my nonsense. And so I think it's important to have, you know, I think it's important to hear yourself talk about the nonsense. I think it's important to have somebody who is not invested the way you are.
Like a coach or therapist.
Like a coach or therapist. I think sometimes we can work through things on our own to some degree, but I think when we're really like, when that nonsense has us tied up in a knot, I think it's really important to just get, you know, help when you need it, to help loosen that, to loosen the thing. And by the way, I'm a book obsessive compulsive. I love me some books, a lot of books all the time. Because I do want to work it out myself. And frequently I can. It just depends on what the level of the problem is. If it's a big problem, I think it's just really important to kind of make sure that you have adequate support while you're walking through that thing.
Is this a boy thing? Do women like call girlfriends and reach out for help and boys open books? Or is that, am I making that up?
No, you're not. You know, what girls do is, women do is, there's women's culture. That's one of the known things. We're told, oh, we got to do it on our own. See that Marlboro man out there? That's who you're supposed to be. Well, women get together. I mean, I really, the first time I had a really good woman best friend, this was in my 40s, right? And because I have my two best friends go back to third grade in high school, and they're guys, right? And we're best friends to this day, 30 years, right? And we go out to lunch, and she leans forward and goes, how's your relationship going? And I'm going, who asks a question like that? And then I go, this is how women talk. I'm on the inside. Oh, this is going to get to be good. You know? And women do. And it's one of the things that I think helps. Women are always checking in. They're getting that independent observer from another person. Sometimes it's a better observer than not. Sometimes they're running their own trips. But they're getting support where guys don't get that. You know, and it really puts us behind the bar, because we don't get that independent look at the relationship. I mean, if there's anything that I do when I'm working with my clients is I can give that independent but compassionate viewpoint that's not locked in the cycle. You know, basically, I help them ask the question, gosh, of all the experiences I could be having, I mean, all of them. isn't it interesting I'm having this one? I wonder how I'm creating that or how my brain is creating that. If you want to know what the question is that unlocks everything is, if you're in a cycle with yourself or with others or your intimate partner, and you step back just for one little bit and go, gosh, I wonder how I'm creating this. I wonder how we are creating this. That is the one degree of separation. That is the difference between those who can make changes and move forward in love and those that get locked in the cycle.
So it's
and
sort
what
of,
geniuses we are to create this.
At one point it was genius because everyone, when I work with couples, every one of those dueling cycles they're into, at one point in time, each of those cycles, I guarantee, was the very best deal available.
What did you want to say?
You know, I was just going to say that sort of like when you're talking about one degree of separation, to me, it's sort of the difference between, shall we say, reacting to something versus being conscious of the thing.
Yes. Yes. It's the difference what Dan Siegel calls, are we in a responsive state or a reactive state? And reactive states usually don't have a whole lot of consciousness or love to them. Yeah.
So we're in the final minutes of the show. Mm-hmm. So how would you wrap this up? What is like your best nugget for how to release the pain of past relationships and create the love you deserve?
Well, what I want, the big message that I try to give to everybody is that we live in an epidemic of unworthiness. There's so many voices and little places that tell us we're not worthy. You go on the website and you're thinking about who do I, you know, and you go, gosh, did I do Pilates? am I 6'2"? Do I hike? You know, and we see these long lists of compatibilities and we think, gosh, I have to have everything like that. And I've had to read Dostoevsky too. Who knew? Right. And so we get all these messages that we're not worthy. And if there's anything, you were born worthy of love. Everyone, we were born worthy. Someone had to teach you that you weren't worthy. You were born to have the empowerment that can choose what's right for your heart. You were born worthy of having a home place in the heart of someone else. Everybody deserves a love that lasts. And if there's anything I can leave with you, you were born that way. Some part of your brain did a really good job of surviving, and it's just helping that part update the safety protocols and that's to a different level. And it is about safety. I mean, you were talking earlier about safety. I was on stage once, and somebody took, it was a panel discussion, and a guy that had a couple cable television shows on major channels said, who wants to be safe? We want passion. We want sex. Right? And he said, nobody wants to be safe. To which I respond, I said, you know, that's interesting because, you know, yes, I get that the excitement and passion sounds all better, but safety is really the bottom line for even that. I said, you know, when they do a functional MRI of a woman's brain when she's having sex, for her to have an orgasm, her amygdala has to be totally dark. It has to be totally off. She has to feel 100%.
Meaning she has to feel safe.
I said, how many of you like safe now?
Oh my God. That is so wonderful. Oh my God. I love that. Oh, that is, what a way to close. So,
yes. Okay. So where can we find your book?
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, we are going to have a link to your book in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume it's on Amazon. Is it also Barnes & Noble and other bookstores?
It's on Amazon. There may be a few. I know there's been a few, but typically it's on Amazon.
Yeah. Listen, this year, buy your books on Amazon.
Yes.
2022, we'll all go back to bookstores. I love bookstores, but yeah, make sure that it's on Amazon. We are going to have a link to the book in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And I am just totally stuck on what you said about safety being necessary for orgasms. I was thinking that guy must feel so safe if he feels safe enough to not want to be safe. If that makes, yeah. So what you said about, you know, these beliefs and these things about unworthiness, that's the whole reason we created the show. Is there so much garbage saying that, oh, past the expiration date for love, get out of here, when it's actually in reality totally the opposite, where as we get older, we get smarter.
Yes.
We learn more and more of those lessons that you were talking about. We've had more of those lesson partners. And so love gets better at midlife. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Gary Salyer.
Thank you.
Great wisdom. Thank you so much. Join us again at Crazy Sexy Midlife Love, Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time every week. And check out our website, crazysexymidlifelove.com. Join the family and be sure to download Devin's free book, Women Are Smarter Than Men. And we will see you next week.
They are. Anyway, take care, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.